what does the gut have to do with fertility specifically, and why do so many women need gut repair after being on birth control for so many years?
I would say of the three most impactful things that birth control impacts, it is the micronutrients, the liver detox, and the gut.
How exactly does chronic stress or a lack of joy or both, how does that shut down fertility, and what can women do to heal their nervous systems before pregnancy?
When you have a dysfunctional nervous system, that absolutely can impact your ability to get pregnant. Welcome back to Healthy as a Mother. I'm your co-host, Dr. Leah Gordon, and this is the show for becoming and being a mother, where Dr. Morgan and I share the natural women's health and motherhood guidance you've been looking for through a fresh, functional, and balanced lens. Today, we talk about what to do when you get off birth control to prepare for pregnancy. We discuss some key preconception concepts like the nutrients that birth control depletes, why birth control impacts our body in such a big way, affecting our gut health, our liver detox, and we talk about nervous system regulation and stress and what to actually do about it, and I think that the answers are going to surprise you. This is a really passion-filled episode. Dr. Morgan and I go off on a couple really fun, cool tangents, and it gives you a lot of amazing tools that you can use if you are on your journey toward motherhood and birth control was a part of your journey either currently or in the past. So without further ado, let's get started.
Okay, we are back and we are here talking about preconception again because there's just so much to say. And we do have a really good episode that we did in the very beginning, our first season. And we will link that in the show notes so that you can go back and listen to that too. But this time we're going to take a little bit of a different spin and continue to educate around what you and your partner could be doing. What are some of the main factors to think about during your preconception time, which is the beforehand conception, like before you conceive? There optimally, ideally, would be an intentional time period that you and your partner are going through where you're really just trying to live healthfully. And it's always so funny. It's like whenever we have these conversations about preconception, it's really just the way that we should probably be living all the time. But it does take a lot of, you know, special effort, basically, that a lot of people don't feel that they can do 100% of the time in their life. But it does kind of make you think it's sort of a funny idea. So there is no better person to talk about this than you, where this is your specialty. So can you go ahead and dive into, you know, what would be some of the things that you want people to know about in preconception?
Yeah, absolutely. So this episode is preconception, but with the focus of anyone who is either currently on birth control, thinking about coming off, or has been on birth control, and some more nuanced things to think about in the preconception period, if that's been part of your history. Obviously, if you haven't been on birth control, this still applies in many ways because preparing the body for pregnancy is sort of universal, but I'll bring in some tidbits around what to think about if birth control, hormonal birth control in particular, has been in your situation.
What actually is happening? So for some reason, I think that there is a misconception. People think, oh, I'm just going to get off birth control and I'm going to get my cycle back that next month and boom, because they hear stories where some people miss one pill or whatever, and then they get pregnant. And yes, there are people that that happens to, but that's not the majority of cases. And the vast majority of people are going to have a certain time period where their bodies are getting used to not being on birth control anymore. And there's a lot that goes on to that process. So tell me, what is exactly happening in a woman's body when she stops birth control, and why this transition deserves like real effort and support instead of just the wait and see approach, which is what conventionally is recommended?
Yeah, it's such a good question. Well, to answer what happens when we get off birth control, let's first start what happens when we get on hormonal birth control. What is going on is that there's this really complex, beautiful orchestra happening inside of a woman's body with hormones. And it's honestly fascinating that this happens, and that I guess it's not shocking that a lot of imbalances can happen and why a lot of women have hormonal imbalance symptoms and imbalances with their periods, because it is really complex. But there's this beautiful communication between the brain, the hormones in the brain, and the ovaries. And there's this constant negative feedback and positive feedback loop that is always happening, where the body's checking in to say, is there a low or a high amount of hormone? And it's always secreting certain things at different times. And it's how we have ovulation and then we have a period. On birth control, what happens on hormonal birth control is that you are taking synthetic hormones that basically shuts down that whole rhythm. it shuts down the communication between the brain and the ovaries. You're getting a small, low dose of hormones. And so the body interprets that as, oh, we don't need to do this anymore because we have everything. It turns off those positive and negative feedback loops. So when someone stops hormonal birth control, the body is trying to reboot that system and reignite that communication between the brain and the ovaries. And it depends on why a woman went on birth control in the first place and how long she's been on it. That process can sort of struggle to get back on board. And there can be surges in certain hormones. In particular, a lot of women experience what we call a post-pill acne or androgen surge. Androgens are the names for hormones like testosterone or DHEA. And let's say a woman went on birth control because she had acne or irregular cycles, which is a classic reason for a hormone prescription when people are younger. And typically that's because they have higher testosterone or higher androgens. And then they take the birth control. It suppresses that, so their acne, quote unquote, gets better. But then they go to stop birth control. And now the system is, it's like rebooting an old conveyor belt in a rusty building, you know, and maybe there's like flickering of electricity or there's like other things that are trying to come back on board. And so sometimes the body overshoots. And we can have these surges of hormones at levels that we shouldn't have. And that is one example of the system trying to reset. Sometimes women don't get their cycle right away and they think that they should. But more than anything, not even the body trying to have that communication of the brain to the ovary hormones, there's a lot of imbalances that birth control itself depletes. And so just jumping right into pregnancy after being off of birth control for only a month or so isn't really the wisest choice because of all of the imbalances that are in play, not only from birth control, but from the reasons that maybe birth control was prescribed if for any reason outside of contraception. So the first thing is that birth control depletes a lot of nutrients.
I think it's wild that nobody talks about it. I just have to go back to, before we talk about nutrients,
yeah,
how the hormonal state, it shocks women. So say, you know, I can think of one particular girl that I went to junior high with. I hadn't even had my period yet. This mm-hmm. chick, I feel so bad for her. She probably has endo or had endo, mm-hmm. but she would like pass out from her cramps during lunch and things like that at like, you know, 15 years old. Mm-hmm. Poor lady. And so then she was put on birth control, which I totally understand. And it was also, mm-hmm. you know, back in the day where nobody really thought to look into any kind of functional reasoning behind that. But it's like, okay, so let's just pretend in her life she was on birth control for 15 years. Now she wants to have a baby. She gets off of it. And the exact same dysfunctional picture of whatever was going on is likely to rear its head again and come back. And it's like, okay, or people for PCOS or nothing was really going on. They just didn't want to get pregnant. But then now they're, like you said about the kind of the rusty conveyor belt, it's so true. For some reason, in some women, it's like the lights don't turn back on for a mm-hmm. long time. I mean, like mm-hmm. I'm talking a year, maybe 18 months, something like that. And it's maybe trying. And like you said, there's some hormones that are going well, but there is a phenomenon where it doesn't come back. Your cycle will not re-regulate for a long time, or you'll have all these funky symptoms. And then sometimes the doctors are like, well, go get back on birth control. And it's like, no, I want to have a baby. You know what I mean? And so this like turning it on, turning it off. And really what birth control does too, I just want to say in case people don't know, is it sort of makes your body think that you're pregnant in terms of the way that the hormone levels are. It doesn't actually obviously think you're pregnant. It's not going to do a lot of the other pregnancy things, but there is a certain level of that where being in this sort of shut down from the cycle of things state, like we've shut down the cyclical nature of this loop and it's been stagnant. And now let's pretend it's been stagnant for 10 or 15 years, mm-hmm. you know, like there's repercussions of that. And so if this is you, we're not trying to shame anybody or say it's not a perfect system. Obviously it does do well with preventing pregnancy and that's an important thing too, but it's frustrating when people are not given it full, true, informed consent to say, hey, did you know that this is what's happening? And unfortunately, OBGYNs or primary care physicians, they should know about these nutrient depletions because they're very well documented. They're not fake. It's not a conspiracy. This isn't even fringy. It's like very well known about how certain medications have specific nutrient deficiencies that they cause.
Yeah.
And birth control is one of the worst with this. And especially mm-hmm. the nutrients that we need in fertility. So it's sort of a double-edged sword here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's so true. And before I talk about the nutrients, I just want to back up And my biggest beef with birth control is absolutely, I've prescribed it for patients. It can be life-saving, especially in women who have severe painful periods, and that is usually endometriosis, sadly. So if you're anyone listening, if you were a person who was put on birth control because of really severe painful periods, or you know someone, it's very wise potentially to have that investigated and potentially even do a laparoscopic surgery with a trained doctor who's very good at that to have it removed, because the tissue of endo is very unique and different. And so I absolutely understand the need for birth control. Outside of pure contraception, a lot of women are prescribed birth control for hormonal problems like irregular periods, acne, heavy periods, light periods, painful periods, like any fill in the blank, they are put on birth control. And I'm not, again, we're not shaming anyone who that's happened to, because I've been there with issues and pain. I have friends and patients who have. It makes sense why we feel, especially doctors are like, oh my gosh, I help this patient so much. You know, I put them on birth control and look, they have no more acne. They have no more painful periods. Mm-hmm. I'm so great at helping them. The problem and why this matters with fertility is that there are reasons. Your body is talking to you through symptoms. It is wise, and symptoms are the language of our body. It can't talk to us in any other way. Our body doesn't wake up and say, hi, Leah, today I feel hungry. Will you feed me? Like, but it does talk to us. It's just a different language. It doesn't use English or Spanish or French. It uses another language, and they are called symptoms. Symptoms are how our body talks to us. We literally have a tummy that growls when we're hungry, or we get fatigued or feel tired when we're tired. And if there's some severe thing that is abnormal, that it shouldn't be happening, we need to, as a culture, a society, and as a medical system, and as women, learn to have a different mindset and approach to say, what are you trying to tell me, body? What are you trying to say? How do I get curious and learn to understand what you're trying to tell me so that I can help you, versus just cover it up, medicate away the symptoms? Because the analogy I use all the time with birth control is it's a fire alarm. And if you have a fire in your house, that's a problem. And the fire alarm is there to alert you and say, there's a fire, pay attention, I'm going to save your life, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's blaring, blaring, blaring. It's so loud and annoying. If anyone's had a fire alarm go off in their house, it's the worst thing ever. It gets our attention, though, in a big way. So does acne, so do painful periods, you know, so do irregular periods. But what the analogy of birth control is that you just go and unplug the fire alarm. Mm. You're like, did it. I solved it. There's no more beeping. Look at me. I'm so great. Here I am, birth control. Like, unplugging the fire alarm, you have covered up the symptom of the blaring noise, of the uncomfortable symptom, but you did not address the fire. You did not make the fire alarm turn off because you actually addressed and put out the fire. You just unplugged the fire alarm. And that is the equivalent of what birth control is doing when we use it for symptoms, symptom management. And let's say you have a fire in your house, you have symptoms and balance that's trying to get your attention early on. You get on birth control. Now 10, 15 years goes by. You're like, I'm ready for a baby. I'm so excited. And you go plug the fire alarm back in, because that's the equivalent of taking yourself off birth control. And unbeknownst to you, this entire decade, you've been burning to the ground. Your body is inflamed. It has a microbiome imbalance. You have nutrient deficiencies. You have all of these things. And so with preparing for pregnancy after birth control, it's not to just undo the harm that birth control has created. There is a piece of that. But a bigger piece is it hasn't given you, being on birth control hasn't given you the chance to figure out what's going on in your body to heal and fix that could potentially impact your ability to get pregnant, but also the health of yourself and your future kids. So there's so much more here than just, what does birth control itself do? But there is that reality. And so we can pivot back to the nutrients, because just being on birth control alone, even if you had no other symptoms when you started it, just the act of being on hormonal birth control alone depletes certain nutrients that impact our fertility.
Okay, so let's talk about which nutrients are those that are depleted specifically by birth control use.
Yeah, so a lot of B vitamins. There are essential vitamins and minerals are things that we have to get from the outside of us, right? Like, they have to come from our food, from our water, from different places. We do not inherently just produce them. And there are many B vitamins, in particular vitamin B2, which is riboflavin, vitamin B6, which is really important for early pregnancy. This is the one that a lot of women are deficient in that leads to morning sickness and nausea. It depletes vitamin B9, which is folate. That's one that is absolutely needed to help babies' brain develop. If there's not enough folate, they can develop spina bifida and other neurological issues. And vitamin B12, which is needed to make DNA, and it's also needed for detox. Women who have miscarriages sometimes can have a low amount of folate or B12 because they don't have enough of that B vitamin to actually make the DNA to continue to grow this new human. It's a big problem. It depletes key minerals like magnesium, which is involved in hundreds and hundreds of processes in the body, zinc and selenium, which are absolutely essential for your immune system, for fertility, for so many different parts of your reproductive health. Then there's key antioxidants like vitamin C and vitamin E that it depletes, and even for some CoQ10. And the analogy that I want people to think about in this section is my famous alphabet analogy. If you speak English, we have 26 letters in the English language, and there's just 26 that make up our entire language. Imagine you just threw out A and the letter C and the letter L and the letter M. Let's just say the four deficiencies, right? There are four letters missing. Our entire written language would make no sense. We couldn't have a language. Like, every letter is needed. Some are a little bit more important than others. Like, the vowels are a little bit more important than the letter Z, but they are all important. And so if you've been on birth control that's depleting your vowels, your B vitamins, and some of your important consonants like your minerals, and you try to have the body function optimally, it's literally missing key building blocks. It's missing the cogs and the wheels that make certain things turn and make certain things go. Your body can't function optimally when it's deficient in some of these. And so I think people sometimes hear deficiency of nutrients, but it doesn't really hit home as to what that means. And it's just, imagine your body is this alphabet trying to write a story, and it can't.
It's almost like there should be dual prescription. You know how, like, when people go on Accutane, they have to take, is it, what do they have to take? Folate? No.
I mean, I don't know if they actually give you that. They should.
But what, I mean, they give you?
There's a miscarriage medication that you have to be on folate because it depletes folate. Is that what you're thinking about? And Accutane, you have to be on birth control if you take
You have to be on birth control, but there is a medicine. I'm trying to look this up. I think there's something that they give you. Oh, no. It's not Accutane. You know what I'm thinking of? This is my own pregnancy brain. I'm thinking of methotrexate. When people have to take methotrexate for some reason, like maybe it's for
a miscarriage,
or, you know, it's also used as a chemo drug, but you have to take folate alongside of it because it's such a depleter of that. I mean, that's like literally how it functions and it works, but it's not rocket science. This should be something where everybody who's on birth control should be taking probably a prenatal, because we need good high levels of these amounts.
Yes. It's crazy. And every pill packet of a prenatal, there should be another pill that you take, or even your like sham pills. You know, a lot of people don't realize that a week of your period when you quote unquote bleed is just a withdrawal bleed because you're no longer taking the hormones. You are taking a pill just for your own consistency, but there's nothing in it. It's just an empty pill. Why not put vitamins in that? You know, it's just crazy. So
did you know that while 97% of women take a prenatal vitamin, over 95% are still deficient? That's why I love recommending Needed's Prenatal. Unlike most prenatals, Needed doses nutrients in the right forms and amounts that go above and beyond to really support both mama and baby. I actually worked with Needed for years. We spent over 3 years researching, working with practitioners, and really intentionally choosing every single nutrient form and dosage that's put into the prenatal. And now we have the data to back it up. In an IRB study, they found that the women who took the Needed prenatal had higher blood levels of key nutrients like vitamin B6, vitamin D, vitamin B12, riboflavin, vitamin K2, and selenium, compared to women who are taking a regular prenatal. Even more powerful, only the Needed group had significant amounts of vitamin D in their system, which is essential for supporting the immune system, bone development, blood sugar, blood pressure regulation, and so much more. This study reinforces what we've known for a long time, that real nourishment really makes a difference, and the proper nutrients support fertility, pregnancy, and baby's health. Needed isn't just aiming for adequacy, they're supporting what's possible. No matter where you are along your fertility or pregnancy journey, Needed is what I recommend. Head to thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% on your first subscription order. Again, head to thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20%. Okay, now back to the show.
Yeah, that is so funny. I mean, or, you know, it should just be on the wherewithal of practitioners. Like, they know this. They should say, hey, just so you know.
They don't know this.
Or maybe they don't know it. Isn't that so sad?
You guys, for anyone listening, most medical doctors get 1 to 3 hours total in their entire medical education on nutrition.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's insane. I remember when I was in undergrad, I always wanted to be a doctor and I was studying nutrition, but I was on the pre-med route. So I was in, you know, gross anatomy. So we're dissecting cadavers and all of this. So I'm with all of the pre-med students, but I had a specialty studying nutrition. I remember this one guy, we were close because we were both pretty smart. And so we would study together and, like, I don't know, he just was like confused by me, but he asked me one time that he's like, I just don't understand why you're studying nutrition. Like, what does that have to do with health?
Oh.
And I was like, oh my God, I cannot believe you're the future doctor of our world. Like, what is happening? Like, you're a smart guy. What in the world? What do you mean? What does it have to do with health? It is health. Like, what are you talking about? Like,
we've culturally bamboozled everybody. And the idea too about using birth control for hormone management, like you were mentioning, obviously I agree with you. And if there's a time and place for every medication, there's a time and place for every treatment of every kind. I truly believe that. Mm-hmm. Well, almost. I mean, I don't know. I can't really think of one right now that I would say, no, never does that make sense ever. Like, it's just not true. There's always some kind of nuanced reason. And like with endo or whatever it is, or like in a time period where we really need to figure something out, you know, you can do it. But the fact that there's not a like philosophical, theoretical, conceptual edge alongside those prescriptions for the practitioner to wonder and say, what is going on? You know, especially for teenagers. I just feel bad for teenage girls because it's like so classic. And, you know, maybe I'm hoping it'll be different for you and I and our daughters, but it's like, they eat crap food. They stay up super late. It's like the teenage lifestyle is a mess for hormones. Mm-hmm. And liver stagnation and all of these different things, as the hormones are all turning on, they're getting these surges of estrogen, testosterone, everything's happening so fast. It's like that is a time where specifically nutrition and targeted supplements, but also they do need to be working on some of these basic lifestyle things, could be so impactful so that the early years of their cycle, like that, all those cogs in the wheel, like it clicks into place in a functioning way and it doesn't develop a dysfunctional pattern. Like, you know, there are certain genetic predispositions, but it's like, why, like that girl I was thinking of, like why her little 15-year-old self, did it already begin like that for her? You know, what was going on? Like what else was happening in her body or with her genetics, her epigenetics, something. She needed a lot of support. She did not get it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it resulted in who knows what down the line, but in her younger years, passing out at the lunch table because of such bad cramps and stuff. And it's like, whoa, it does not have to be this way. And, you know, it's so permeated through our culture to just shame period, not shame periods, but just like want to dismiss them, shove them under the rug. It's like, I don't want that. I don't want a period. I think I've told this story before on this podcast, and sorry, I'm just going to tell it really quick again and we'll keep going. Mm-hmm. But I was somebody who developed, bloomed very late, and I got my period right about 15. Never really got boobs. I wanted them so bad. And I felt so excited when I got it finally because everybody else around me had it, and I just wanted to be like everyone else and fit in and everything. But I have literally no memories of my early periods. They were just like really normal. I didn't think about it as a negative thing simply because I had wanted it so badly. Mm-hmm. But I do probably feel like I aligned with the culture of things of being like, oh yeah, guys, I'm on my period again. But secretly I was like really happy, you know? But one time I went to this like leadership camp thing called Ryla, which has to do with Rotary. And it is like so amazing. Honestly, it changed my life. And there was a girl there and she was my roommate for the weekend. And she was like an uber duper hippie. And she like laid on her bed, on the bed in our room one day, like, I don't know, in the very beginning of the camp. And she's like, oh, I just got my period. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry. Like, that sucks. You know that? And she was like, no, I love my period. She was so dramatic. It was literally like a movie. It was kind of like Ariana Grande and Wicked. She like sat up and she's like, no, I love my period. It makes me feel like a woman. And then she like fell back onto the bed and like,
oh my gosh.
She was just so embodied in it. And she's like, I love it. Like, I love when I'm bleeding and da 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 da. You know, it's concepts that we see now in the very pro woman, pro you know, reproductive health culture and era where people are like embracing it and they're actually, you know, paying attention to where they are in their cycle when they're planning their meetings and their work stuff and then their rest time and their luteal phase and blah, 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 like where we're being like conscious and intentional about our limitations and our like superpowers that have to do with our cycles.
Yeah.
And she was so ahead of the game. She was like 17 and it really impacted. It was jaw dropping for me, like, because it made sense. The feeling that I remember most is it was like remembering a truth.
Yeah. You know,
like our cycles can be this amazing thing. It doesn't have to be something that we shut, like, oh, I don't want to have that. I'm just going to skip it. You know?
Yeah. Like I've said, your cycles are another way of your body talking to you. And the having a monthly, normal flow, not very painful cycle is a sign of optimal health and optimal fertility. And anything that deviates from that is a big red flag that like something is not right. Pay attention to me. And the thing I hate the most is the lack of connection that practitioners and parents, not that it's their fault, they don't know. I mean, a lot of women who have daughters, like our mothers, it's not like they were given the handbook of this is how your daughters can be better than what you were given, which was probably even worse than what we were given, you know, but that, hey, if you want a baby someday, your period's important. If you want to have a healthy sex life one day, which I know a lot of people feel weird about talking to their teenagers about, but these are the women I see in practice and that I see in my membership. And it all the clues that there's going to be an issue with their fertility or with their sexuality were all very obvious when they were younger. And it had a lot to do with their cycle. And there's no connection that people make for a younger person to say, oh, you're having painful periods. Like that's something we should look into because you might not be able to have kids, but you can if you can find the root cause and heal it. Or, you know, don't just take birth control to cover up this unwanted symptom. You know, one day you might get off. I'm thinking of a current patient of mine, like you were put on birth control for acne and one day you might get off wanting to have a baby and no one helped support you. And now you're going down this horrible, long infertility, being shoved into IVF. It's not working. Nothing's happening when anyone could have just helped her, you know, and maybe she goes on birth control to help the acne, but we're working on the underlying cause in the first place. So oh, there's like so much. I get so worked up about it. And
I love it when you get worked up. It's my favorite.
I know. Well, and even like this is like kind of veering off, but it is around birth control. Like for people who've been following me, the reason I care so much about libido is because I've had painful intercourse for so long. I mean, that's getting better, which I'm so excited. But I've just learned recently, you guys, I'm a doctor and I've been dealing with this since I was 18 years old. It's been almost 18 years. And I just found out that a lot of my issue is something called provoked vestibulodynia. And it's basically pain in like this vulvar area. But the number one cause that causes it is birth control. Hormonally derived PVD, number one cause is hormonal birth control. WTF? Why is no one talking about this?
And how, like, long, long were you on birth control for?
I went on it at 18 and then I got off like probably right when I was about to start medical school. So probably 6 years.
Yeah, not even as, you know, not really probably
not even that
average long length, yeah.
But I was impacted by it in a really big way. And there's other key like factors to my story and all of that. It's just, it's something that has plagued me and that I've like looked into. And so it's like birth control is not innocent is what I'm saying. And it's not like it's the devil. It's not like we can't ever use it and it's never serves a purpose. But we need to know these things.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, if someone starts birth control or they try to get off of it and they're having these experiences, we need to know that birth control can be a part of that picture. So,
well, the frustrating thing is that nobody, this is the problem with all of the things that are going wrong with society, is that they flippantly make these recommendations as if there's no repercussions, because it's not true informed consent, because somewhere along the line, we have lost informed consent. If they said, hey, here's a medication you can take and here's some purposes, and you know, we need to be watching and tracking these different factors. Oh, okay, it's going to deplete these nutrients, so here you got to also take these things. No, but they act like it's a beautifully perfect benign, oh well, just go get on birth control, like,
yeah,
there's nothing possible that can happen. You know, it's kind of like Botox. Actually, I stumbled down this whole rabbit hole about, I did not know this, I mean, I've never been interested in Botox personally, but I had no idea the amount of people who've been permanently harmed by just using, like, I thought that maybe if you had some kind of, like, you know, neurological something that would have happened from Botox, it would have happened because you were using it in a kind of different way. But this is like regular use label for your forehead, around your smile lines or whatever. And these people are having, I mean, it's not as common as, you know, the people who have it, and it's normal, obviously, thank goodness. But I just didn't even know that was possible for them to have forever permanent neurological pain and spasms and all these different things, or like loss of function. There was a woman who completely lost her ability to swallow in her muscles because the Botox medication had migrated from her cheek muscles into her esophagus and paralyzed them now forever. She has a feeding tube. She's like 33.
My God.
Yeah, and she can never swallow again. She's like, I can't eat. I can't go out with my friends. I can't swallow drinks. I have to blend up all my food and put it in a feeding tube. And she's just like, I had no idea this could happen. And here's the thing. So many people are still going to choose Botox, but it's like, why not say those sentences to people? Like, there are repercussions of some of this stuff. And it's okay. You're not fear-mongering. You're just knowing the whole picture. You're just saying, okay, you know what? And I'm still going to take it. Like, I'm still going to give my daughter ibuprofen when she's having a really hard time sleeping because of teething pain. I'm still going to do it. Like, I know some of the repercussions. That doesn't make me never want to do it. Like, I don't know why people cannot hold these two things in their head at once. It's not all hunky-dory, and it's not all bad. It's always a mix of both, you know? So,
well, and the, I know this is like kind of turning into like a thing about birth control, but that's okay. I mean, this is important for us to talk about. And the biggest thing, there's a lot of history with birth control. If you guys are interested in learning more about it, there's a great book called The Birth of the Pill. And I love history. I'm very fascinated with why we are where we're at, sort of like you are with anthropology, which is like way long ago history. But I'm really interested in even like cultural history of how we got places and why things are the way they are. Anyways, first and foremost is, one of the reasons why birth control is used so flippantly and so often on hormonal issues with women is because there was such a religious stigma around contraception when it first was being invented in the 50s, that they couldn't use it or say that it was for preventing pregnancy. They had to get it approved through the FDA as a hormone balancing treatment, basically. And if you think about the medical schools and the drug companies, I mean, the 50s was not that long ago. Most of the people who were in charge there, there's only been like one, maybe two other people. Like, think about a tenured professor at a university. You know, he was probably just coming in as a young person, and then he's like, you know, trained over one other person in this time since the 50s. Like, the thought process doesn't change very quickly if they're teaching in the medical schools or whatever. Obviously, the pharmaceutical company loves to push this because every woman in like the whole world could fall into the category of they have a hormonal imbalance or they want to prevent pregnancy. So that means every healthy woman or any woman in general could be a customer of theirs. So they're obviously going to push that really hard. But the other thing is that the way that they got it through FDA approval is that the symptoms and all the side effects, including death, women die from birth control all the time. It's in the insert that no one reads, the very long folded up insert with all of the side effects from birth control. It's in a folded up piece of paper in size like 5 font that literally no one reads and no doctor tells or highlights, but it's all in there. It has to be legally, but these side effects are compared to a pregnant woman, not a healthy woman who is not pregnant. And in their mind, they say, well, women die in childbirth all the time, so birth control is safer. Therefore, it is a safe thing.
Oh, my gosh.
That's literally how they get it through. They say, well, women have clots in pregnancy all the time, and birth control causes clots, but it's safer than the pregnant women who get clots. So therefore, it is safe, and we don't need to tell anybody because all of the issues with birth control are compared to a pregnant woman.
Wow. I did not know that. It's kind of like with a lot of the vaccine trials, almost all of them, they're not comparing vaccinated to unvaccinated or like a true placebo injection. They're comparing it to a different vaccine. Or an injection that just doesn't contain the adjuvant, that doesn't contain the antigen, but contains all the other rest of the ingredients. It's like, so they're saying like, oh, well, these two groups are the same or whatever. It's like, wait, but you didn't do it with a placebo. You didn't do it against like the actual way that you should do the scientific trial.
I know. That's crazy. Anyways, did you know proper hydration and mineral balance are key for hormone health, fertility, and preparing for pregnancy? This is why Dr. Morgan and I love Relight by Redmond's, the real salt people. A USA-made electrolyte powder with unrefined sea salt, over 60 trace minerals, plus bioavailable forms of potassium, calcium, and 2 forms of magnesium, malate and glycinate. These minerals support hormones, hydration, energy, and overall health. The best part is they taste delicious.
I'm really picky about how things taste, and so you can rest assured this is Dr. Leah approved. I love lemon lime, but I know Dr. Morgan is a strawberry lemonade gal. Head to redmond.life and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15% off your order of electrolytes, real sea salt, natural toothpaste, and so much more. Again, head to redmond.life and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15%. Happy hydrating on your womanhood and fertility journey.
Okay, so why is detox before pregnancy especially important if you've been on birth control?
Yeah, it's a good question. So when we talk about detox, detox is the body's ability to get rid of toxins and chemicals and unwanted things out of the body. Technically, the term is called biotransformation. That's what the body is doing to package up things like hormones or toxins that the body either makes itself, because we make toxins, you know, we make carbon dioxide, we have to breathe it out. We can't just keep carbon dioxide in our body. We make a lot of things like ammonia. That's why we pee. You know, we have to get these things out of our body. It's not all from our environment, but we are being exposed to a ton of other chemicals and toxins in our environment. So the body is burdened with or has to deal with the internal toxins and the external toxins. And for the most part, it's using the liver. It's using our bowels and our urine to do that. Birth control, unfortunately, is very hard on the liver. And when we say hard on the liver, it kind of can feel like vague. And what does that mean? And I won't get into all of the nitty-gritty details, but essentially, if you're taking a synthetic hormone every day, almost every day, let's count like not the pill or the bleed weeks, since the time you were maybe 15 to 35, every single day your body is having to process this additional synthetic hormone. It not only bogs down the liver, impacts the biotransformation process, but through all the other impacts, like the nutrient deficiencies we've already talked about, the liver and all of the detox processes in the body need those vitamins and minerals to do their job. If they don't have them, things build up. So the analogy that I teach in my detox course inside of Womanhood Wellness is about a train. So imagine there's a poop train or a pee train, and that's how we get things out of our body: sweat, poop, pee, breath, right? So let's just take the poop train, for example, and you have tickets and you have to get a ticket to get on the poop train. That is what happens in the liver. You have to get a specific ticket to get on a bus to then go to the train station, get another ticket to get on the poop train. These are the two phases of liver detox, phase one and phase two. And if there is a buildup of so many toxins, like imagine a big mosh pit of people trying to get on a bus or trying to get, you know, they've gotten off the bus, they're waiting for the train, and there's not enough tickets, or, you know, the person who's giving the tickets is just out at lunch. Like, he's not here. Like, that's what happens when you don't have enough B vitamins. Like, no one's giving you the tickets. There aren't things that can happen. And then you throw in all of these external things. And so birth control really bogs that down and impacts that in a way that we need to support and give extra support to the liver, not only so that it can process the actual hormones of birth control, but so that we can support all of that bogged down, backed upness that has happened, so that when you become pregnant, you're not dealing with, you know, a very angry mob of people waiting for the poop train, which can lead to, you know, nausea in pregnancy. It can lead to infertility. It can lead to all sorts of issues later on. And so we absolutely want to support detox before pregnancy, but if you've been on birth control, we want to do this even more.
Yeah. And just the idea too about when you've stopped taking birth control and you're trying to get these steroid hormones out of your system, supporting the liver in that kind of a way too. It'd be great to do a little bit of targeted nutrition or targeted, a temporary amount, a finite, you know, maybe 3-4 months, something like that, of maybe DIM or milk thistle or artichoke. You know, you're taking some of these things that we know that can help the phase one and phase two ramp up that process to get it all out of your system so that your, hopefully your brain to ovary hormones can begin to talk again.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. Just quick, like you said, DIM and IC3, they're from the cruciferous vegetables. So eating cruciferous vegetables is great. Taking DIM as a supplement, milk thistle, like you said, artichoke, those are all really wonderful, beautiful herbs that help that process. Love that.
Yeah. Love that. I also really love, the liver sauce by Quicksilver is another one. It tastes absolutely horrible, but you just get over it. It's kind of like with all tinctures.
That taste, though, I just want to highlight that. When things taste horrible, they're usually bitter. And the cool thing about bitter is literally tasting something bitter, a bitter herb or a bitter plant, vegetable, or whatever, it stimulates the gallbladder. And the gallbladder is another important place that we process our hormones and our toxins. It also, it stimulates our digestive enzymes in general, but it's really, really good for the gallbladder and for the liver itself. So when you taste that bitterness, know that that actual taste of tasting it on your taste buds is actually really helping your gut health and your liver.
Yeah, I love that. People maybe have had the experience of being put on bitters as sort of a digestive enzyme that you take, you know, before a meal or whatever. And that's also, it's one of the reasons why coffee can help with digestion, because it's inherently a bitter. I mean, if you add a bunch of different things to it, then it's not really as much, but
yeah.
Okay. So we've talked about the specific nutrients that are depleted that we need to work on in your preconception time. We've talked about detox and liver support. So let's go on to gut and the microbiome repair. So what does the gut have to do with fertility specifically? And why do so many women need gut repair after being on birth control for so many years? Like, what is it about that that is now harming the gut? And I know it's going to seem at the end of this episode, it's like every system of the body is impacted, but it's because it is, right?
Yeah.
And or maybe not every, you know, it doesn't affect your lungs potentially, something like that. But we're talking about the systems of the body that are implicated in fertility and preconception and having a healthy baby. So gut health is a huge one. So let's go ahead and go into that.
Yeah. So I would say of the three most impactful things that birth control impacts, it is the micronutrients, the liver detox, and the gut. So those are the three biggest hitters. When it comes to gut, if I were to break it down as to why the gut's important for fertility, it prongs into two main categories. The first is the gut's ability to actually absorb the food and nutrients that we eat. If we have an inflamed gut, or we have a leaky gut, or there's something going on with our digestion, we don't have good digestion, even though you put food in your mouth, it doesn't mean that the food that you put in your mouth is getting into your body in a healthy way. I think a lot of people forget that they think once it passes the mouth, all is good. But the digestive system is just a long, hollow tube. And there is a lot that has to happen to break that food down and absorb the nutrients and all the things that are needed for healthy hormones and for fertility. So first and foremost, that is the case. And for a lot of people, oral birth control in particular has been shown to negatively impact the gut. The other thing is the microbiome. So the microbiome are the bacteria that we have in our gut. We are 10 times more bacteria than human, and the majority of it is held in the gut. However, we also have microbes in our vagina and our uterus. These all impact fertility, not only in becoming pregnant, but staying pregnant. And the biggest thing is if there's a dysbiosis, which is bad bacteria. The analogy here I like to use is a yard with grass. If you have a really beautiful yard with just really green grass, that means you have a lot of good, healthy microbes, right? That's the analogy in your body. But if you have mostly a yard of dirt and weeds, that's not good. So there's less ideal bacteria that can be present. It doesn't mean that you have an infection, quote unquote. If you go to the doctor, they'll be like, you don't have an infection, nothing's wrong. But you have a yard that's primarily full of weeds. And those weeds, those bad bacteria, can create inflammation. They can cause all sorts of issues that lead to a disruption, not only in our hormones, they can impact our liver and things like that, but that inflammatory process itself can absolutely lead to implantation issues, so not getting pregnant, but also miscarriage issues. So it's a really big deal to not only absorb your nutrients, but also to have a calm, just picture in your body in general for fertility. And unfortunately, birth control has been shown to very negatively change the microbiome, even to the degree that some people develop gut-related autoimmune conditions from being on hormonal birth control, which is not everybody, but it is a very high risk for hormonal birth control.
Does it increase like leaky gut also?
Yeah.
Oh,
okay. Yeah, it can increase leaky gut. It changes the microbe picture that then can lead to leaky gut. A lot of times leaky gut is from this bad bacteria that can break down the lining of the gut. And so then when you have leaky gut, there's more inflammation because all of these inflammatory things from these bacteria are getting into your bloodstream when they never should be there. And that's what triggers autoimmunity. Autoimmunity isn't just like, whoops, one day your body woke up and it started attacking itself. Like, that is just not what happens, even though a lot of people don't really understand the root cause of it. There's usually always a trigger. Oftentimes it is an infectious trigger or a dysbiotic trigger, or at least it's worsening that. So birth control sadly has been shown to do that. And so we definitely want to improve digestion, improve leaky gut, potentially shift the microbiome with herbs and foods and things like that. Again, you know, you could work with a practitioner, someone like us. I do teach a lot of that inside of my membership, but sometimes gut healing can be a little bit more nuanced and you need a little bit more support based on what specifically is going on with you, but something to note before you try to get pregnant.
If your heart aches for a baby, whether you want a baby someday or you've already been on the journey and it hasn't been as easy as you had hoped, I want you to know that you don't have to do it alone. I created Womanhood Wellness for women just like you. Inside of this amazing membership, you have step-by-step doctor-designed blueprints unique to your womanhood type based on the season that you're in. You have access to order your own labs. You have over 22 amazing courses and growing that I have created for you, all about breaking up with birth control, balancing your hormones, preparing your body for pregnancy, optimizing your fertility, and navigating the root causes of infertility. I have support for pregnancy loss, for navigating integrative IVF, for supporting your partner throughout this process, as well as information about libido, which is one of my favorite things to teach about, because when it comes to womanhood, it's all connected. On top of the amazing content and resources, such as being able to order your own supplements and the protocols that I have, all of the step-by-step checklists of exactly what to do within each lesson in a basic, intermediate, and advanced path, I also have amazing support inside of the membership. Every month you get a live Q&A with me. I have monthly masterclasses taught by me and other amazing practitioners. And bi-weekly, we have connection calls where you get to really connect with women and share and feel seen. We have seasonal circles that are unique to the different seasons of womanhood. For example, if you are breaking up with birth control, or you're struggling with libido, or you are trying to conceive, maybe you're going through IVF, or you've had a pregnancy loss, all of these different scenarios require different support. And so these circles put you together with women just like you so that you can really connect and make long-lasting friendships. You'll finally understand your cycle, your labs, your body, your fertility, and you'll feel empowered in your womanhood journey. So if this sounds exciting to you, I encourage you to go to womanhoodwellness.com and use code podcast to sign up and save 20% on your first month. Again, head to womanhoodwellness.com and use code podcast to save 20%. I can't wait to see you inside.
Okay, awesome. And then we have a couple of other things to talk about with our preconception work, ideally before you get pregnant, that don't have as much to do with birth control, that are more for general, to apply to all people, whether you've been on it or not. And it may not seem as, well, it should. If you've been listening to this podcast, this should ring true, that the idea of having a reduction in stress, having a purpose in your life, seeking joy, a calm, healed nervous system would have an impact on all of these different things, right? Okay, so let's just talk about it. How exactly does chronic stress or a lack of joy or both? Because you could have chronic stress with joy. Mm-hmm. You could have no stress, but also no joy. Mm-hmm. Both things not so, you know, we need to be having like a lower stress plus the joy, ideally. How does that shut down fertility? And what can women do to heal their nervous systems before pregnancy so that it's in the best place possible? And I'm just going to really quickly jump in here and say, this is something that comes up a lot in my work, because women are usually, they have a kid or two, and they're trying to figure out how they want to plan their, you know, next child or something. They're in their family building season still. And this came up the other day. Somebody asked me, well, all right, I'm feeling the press of time. I'm older, has a one-year-old, wants to get pregnant again, but is in like a very, very, very tough life situation. Mm-hmm. Super, super high stress, not sleeping, not eating, not exercising. And she's like, what do I do? Do I, like, I had said that I wanted to take 3 months and really work on my health before getting pregnant again, but I feel like I can't do that. I don't really have the space and time to do that. And I should just jump into pregnancy again. And it's a hard conversation to have, but if to me, like 40 isn't where we have a press of time that big. Maybe 44, 45, mm-hmm. we're thinking, okay, we just got to try to start conceiving, and it could take a little bit of time. So you can work on some of those factors during that time. But to me, 40, it's like, we can take 3 months. You can take 3 or 4 mm-hmm. months. You can work on your health, because your chances of conceiving at the end of that time period are going to be higher anyway, if mm-hmm. we're in a healthier state. But then also, even if your body isn't changed that much, if your mental, emotional state can be better, to then handle now a pregnancy with a toddler and then going into motherhood times two and having two kids and like all of that different stuff. It really is important. And if we need to figure out some big life things, like I need to move, I need to get a different job, I need to leave my partner, like I need to, you know, some big stuff is going on. This is, your body is not going to feel, I know you're going to say this in a second, but your body is not going to feel apt to want to accept a pregnancy in a state of feeling really, really ungrounded. So let's go ahead and dive into that.
Yeah, there's a lot here. So I feel like stress, joy, purpose, nervous system, they seem different, but they're all connected. And how it kind of ties into the birth control thing is, in a way, I feel like when you take hormonal birth control, there's a disconnection from the self. And we're taking a synthetic hormone to basically shut off our own innate womanhood essence, what I call woman essence, which is that innate drive or energy inside of us to reproduce, whether we ever want a baby or not. The reason we have a period every month and ovulate is to have a baby. And what comes with that are all of the different hormonal changes that happen for a woman that is unique to her. And so it drives our sexuality and it's what drives our fertility. It's the woman essence. And when we take birth control, we're kind of detached from that. It turns that part of ourselves off. And when it comes to stress, joy, purpose, and nervous system healing, they are all kind of interconnected. And the biggest thing that I see with women is another disconnection from self. And not necessarily when there's imbalance there, right? Not necessarily because you're taking something like a pill, but various circumstances can occur that disconnect you from self. That could be trauma as a child. That could be certain patterns and beliefs that we adopt to survive. You know, all of us come into this world for the most part, these innocent little beings, and then we are thrown into the environments that we're thrown into. Some of us have, you know, better environments or less stressful or chaotic or traumatic environments than others, but everyone has some level of that. We all put on different identities, we put on different beliefs, we adopt different beliefs, and a lot of nervous system dysregulation starts young like that. And when we talk about stress, the most triggering thing for people on the trying to conceive journey is to be told to reduce your stress. And I've been there. It is really triggering. And it's important. And I think we just have to have a different word or a different conversation about it, because no, someone to just go meditate and reduce their stress isn't necessarily always the answer when we're trying to conceive, especially if there's a lot of other more complex things going on, like you have severe male factor infertility like me, or maybe you're having a miscarriage because you have a clotting problem or whatever. Like, there's a lot of factors at play that you can't just go on vacation and, you know, have a cocktail and get pregnant, which is what people kind of make it sound like you can. But when you have a dysfunctional nervous system that we interpret as quote unquote stress, that absolutely can impact your ability to get pregnant. Just like you said, it blocks us from our ideal self, from our true self, because our true self is fertile. Our true self has a normal cycle without pain. Our true self has a thriving sex drive. Our true womanhood self, these things are all inherent in us. We don't have to work or be a certain way. When we remove all the blockages, that is what is inherent in us. So when we have a dysfunctional nervous system, it's blocking us from that ideal self. And we have to ask ourselves, okay, how do I heal this? And that's where I'm saying that to actually heal your nervous system, yes, there are things that you can do. Like, I'm going to take 5 minutes a day to just deep breathe and to try to meditate and to have these different practices. But what I have found in my practice is that it sometimes often has to go deeper than that. And it has to go a little bit deeper, not only on doing maybe some emotional release work, processing of past childhood traumas or different patterns or beliefs, and you might need to work with someone to get that kind of level of depth of support, but also shifts in your identity. And in my Womanhood Wellness membership, I have a whole course on stress, and I walk people through the practicalness of, like, what exactly do you do? Because I feel like stress is one of those things that's very abstract and everyone knows you shouldn't be stressed, but no one actually knows how to help themselves and how to fix it. And so you really have to ask yourself, okay, of the things, like, I teach in there to do an audit of the things that stress you out in a day and write them all down. And then you figure out, is this something that I can physically shift or change? For example, I'm really stressed getting in my car and driving 30 minutes to work on this busy highway with honking cars and stuff. Okay, that's a big source of your stress. You notice your cortisol is spiking every morning on your commute to work. Can you physically change that? Could you get a different job? Could you get a job closer to home? Could you move to be closer to your job? Could you carpool with somebody so that it's more fun? Could you take a bus? Could you do, like, is there something you can physically change? Think outside the box, right? If it's not something you can physically change, can you shift your mindset around it? For example, my sister-in-law stresses me out. Can I change that? I have no control over that, but I can change my mindset about it. You know, this is theoretical, not that my sister-in-law stresses me out. You know what I mean? I'm just saying mother-in-law, whatever, like something you can't physically change. You know, you can't make them go away, but you can change your mindset about it. And then the deeper rooted things are actually, why is this, what identity inside of me, what belief is actually driving this behavior? For example, I see a lot of women who are high achieving, high functioning, and a lot of times what drives that, I've got to keep going, I have so much to do, I have to keep going, I'm not, whatever. Underlying all of that is I'm not good enough. I won't be loved unless I achieve. I won't be loved unless I'm busy. I'm not of worth unless I'm, you know, unless my schedule is packed. Like, so when you look at yourself, like, what is causing stress in you? Is it a circumstance? Is it a situation? Have you outgrown a partner, like you mentioned? Is the home or the place that you're living in no longer serving you? Like, I really do a self audit, because to tell someone to just reduce their stress and like go on vacation when their entire nervous system is on edge because something really big is not in alignment, that's not great. And the last piece I want to say to that is around joy and purpose. So there was actually a study that came out that they found that the worst sort of stress for people is the ruminating kind, where you're circling the drain and you're thinking about the same thing over and over again. And it's just this constant thing that never, ever goes away. And that so much of that can shift when you have clarity and an identity shift. So getting really clear on, I'm actually going to be teaching this in a masterclass in January. I'm not sure when this is airing, but how to actually have these tools to shift your identity to actually create the life that you want. Because so much of our behavior and our emotional experience of our life is driven through these underlying deep-rooted identities and like thoughts about ourselves. And so that's important. But the other thing that they found in the study was that even people who have a lot to quote-unquote do were less stressed if they had joy and purpose in their life.
Yes. I love that.
So for example, like, you might have 1,000 things to do, but you're doing it on purpose. Like, you're in maybe a work that you love, or, you know, maybe it's motherhood. It's like something that is quote unquote hard from the outside, but this is your joy. This is your purpose, versus the woman who like really struggles in motherhood. The same tasks are being done by both women, but for one, they find joy and purpose in it, and the other they don't. And so it doesn't mean that you have to find joy or purpose in motherhood or in this job or whatever, but that it's not the amount of tasks or how full a person's day is or how many things that they have to do. It's, is your soul in alignment with what you are doing? And that was one of the biggest determinators of if someone actually had chronic stress and nervous system dysregulation.
Yeah, that makes so much sense to me, because here's the thing is, like, some people are going to live high stress lives for a myriad of reasons. And yes, they can totally do an audit and they can change things. But sometimes I wonder how much net overall effect would be improved if they just added more joy. Mm-hmm. Because I think you can live, like, I think I probably live in that space where it's high stress, but it's high joy. Yeah. And it's, so it overall doesn't feel, it's like, it's just bumped up. Like the threshold is like higher, you know?
Yeah.
Because I do have a lot of joy, and so it's okay. Like, all of the crazy factors that are going on, you know, and then there's certain days where I have where like everything feels like it sucks and I'm in the pits of hell or something like that. But most of the time it's really good. So like with your traffic example, if maybe that person, like you said, could carpool with a coworker that they really enjoy, or even find a really interesting podcast or audiobook that you really save so that you only listen to it in the car, so that you have a positive experience now with this thing that you have to do. Like, we don't have to just be in shitty situations and just stay there for no reason. There is right. some things that we can be doing about it. And then if there's really nothing you can be doing about it, like you're really being mistreated at work and you're like, it's super unfair. I mean, sometimes we will put up with things for way too long And it does feel scary, probably because of the stories that we tell ourselves, because of our identity. Like you just said, we feel like we need this job for some reason, or it's a status thing or whatever it is. And it's like, hang on, time out. Like, your life is so, this is your one precious life. It is so short. We do not need to be in situations that we absolutely hate if there's an alternative of whatever that could be. If it's like, you know, obviously everybody has their own different set of circumstances that they're sitting in, but I am just such a proponent of adding joy into your life and literally making a list. I have a note on my phone and it ranges, I'll read some of the things. It ranges from like big stuff to really small stuff. Like here's things that bring me joy. Okay. I made it last year on November 5th. Walks in the corn. So like our cornfield down south. Wes's jokes. So my husband's jokes. Huge groups of birds flying together. Like I love it when you see that, you know? Murmuration, I think is what it's called. Really hot baths. Watching my kids all play. Fields of yellow mustard. Redwood trees. Play dates with my friends. Taking the kids to parks. The black tree silhouette against a sunset. Like how the tree is black, but like the sunset is the bright color behind it. You know what I mean? Like then there's big things, floating the river, like romanticy books. But then there's small things too. Like I love poppies and peonies and dahlias and sunflowers, like certain types of flower, you know, whatever. But just making a list too for any kind of those dark moments where you're like, I don't know what to do. What are some things that I actually really like? Is it reading a book, calling this friend, taking a hot bath? Like, self-care is not a sheet mask.
Yeah.
You know, totally. I mean, that's skincare, but it's going to be whatever lights you up to find awe in life so that you can get back to that rooted purpose of like, what am I doing? Why are we doing this? What am I here on this planet for? And when we're in tough situations, sometimes we don't really have the motivation to then go do like more things. But I promise you, even if you just add in like 10 or 15 minutes of something that you really, really like, it changes things over time. And then you can begin to add more and more. It's probably, you know, some people really love working out and for them, that's it. Like to me, working out is kind of like a chore, you know, it's like just okay. Unless it's me walking in the corn with my dogs outside, because I think that that's really fun. So, you know, everybody has to find their way to make these things sustainable. And it's just important to modulate, because if our goal is pregnancy, you're in your preconception time and you have such a high stress life that you're not able to get pregnant. It's like, what is going to happen when there's a baby now?
Yes.
And people, this is one thing I learned from you too, which it wasn't what we were going to talk about, but I'll just say it really quick, is about acting as if you already, like making room in your life for the thing that you want and acting as if it's almost already here for the purpose of kind of like manifesting, pulling that energy into you, but also for the purpose of being like, yeah, what is going to happen? How am I going to manage having a baby if I don't sleep ever, or having a pregnancy if I don't, if I'm skipping meals all the time or whatever, you know what I'm saying? Like there's so many things that we have to correct and fix before this baby. And sometimes I think energetically it's like the baby maybe doesn't want to even come in, 'cause they're like, I can't like be in this situation. You know, like this person's not even doing the basics.
Yeah, no, it's true. Like you have to make space for them. And a lot of that, and what I've discovered over all the work that I've done with all the practitioners and therapists and all of the things, is it comes down to a simple thing, which is just a shift in your identity. And what I didn't even realize I was doing with my patients and my clients when I would tell them to act as if they were already pregnant, is that you're shifting your identity to, I'm a pregnant person. Yeah. And when you shift your identity, your behavior changes and your mindset changes and everything around you changes. And so the root of it all is shifting that identity. And if you are having a hard time with understanding like who you want your identity to be, like there are certain exercises, again, I'm going to be teaching about that soon, but yeah, that's a big piece.
Yeah. Thank you. I love this. I think that it's just always so important for everybody to hear some of the nuance of these topics. It's kind of hard sometimes to hear, especially if you do have a long history of birth control, but it's not without hope. Like there's things we can do. You just have to actively take those steps. And unfortunately, you're not going to be told to do that by your PCP or OBGYN when you should be. So that's why you're here. You listen to this podcast. We tell you all the things. We want you to get pregnant. We want you to be happy moms. And everybody have a great day.
Yes. Perfect. Thank you.
Thanks.
In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and share with a friend who would benefit from this content. Please remember that the views and ideas from this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to be a substitute for medical care of any kind.
including the diagnosis and treatment of any disease. Consult with your provider before integrating any of this information into your own healthcare plan. A healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.